Hi, everyone. I'm speaking with Sylvia Curry, and she's a community steward for BC Campus. And my name is Glenn Grew, and I'm talking here at the Inn on Inn at the Quay. I think it is Inn at the Quay in Vancouver for the ETUG 2010 Fall Conference, or workshop rather. Anyway, Good afternoon, Sylvia. I have a question about what you do with BC Campus for community stewardship.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, nice. Thank you very much, Glenn. I really appreciate this opportunity because we have a lot to talk about for online communities and what we're doing at BC Campus, but we don't have that many opportunities, nor do we have the time usually to, you know, blog about it and all of the wonderful things that we'd like to be doing. So what my role is at BC Campus is essentially I'm in the curriculum development and academic growth division of BC Campus, and my role is mainly to do with the online communities, and there's sort of two aspects to that. One is a community stewardship for the educator communities, and we have two main ones that I'm directly involved in. One is the Educational Technology Users Group, and that's, you know, this workshop and this community, which is quite a large group of people. And that's a more BC-based community. Then the other is called Scope, and that is quite a different beast. It's an international online community. It's actually started as a sort of an experiment, a contract with Simon Fraser University in 2004. And what we wanted to do is open up some of our discussions and educational events to involve an international audience. And so we established that community, and as funding ran out through Simon Fraser University, BC Campus actually took this community on. And so it's continued to grow. We don't invest a lot of money in promotion or anything. It's all entirely by word of mouth. And so now we're at a membership, but I think its last count was about 2,400 people representing 64 countries. And it's completely run by volunteers, essentially. So my role, I guess, would be the only paid position. And so the stewardship role then is to work with the members in the community to see what topics are emerging, you know, observe what the conversations are about, and see what would be of interest to the members, and then to identify people who would be interested, and then taking a leadership role in the community to facilitate seminar discussions or web conferences or anything. We're like totally open to any kind of ideas for how people want to get involved. And so my role is really, it's kind of neat. It's really keeping a pulse on that community and just trying to work with the members and see what's going to be of value to the members. And then there's a whole other aspect, sort of the administrative side of things, just maintaining the site and being a bit of a curator of the resources and that sort of thing. So that's sort of that's one part of it. So it's the stewardship of the educator communities. Then the other side of my role at BC Campus is to provide support to community leaders, so people who want to create their own online communities. I can support them with that in terms of, you know, making choices about the best technologies to support what they want to do, and you know, help with ideas around promotion and engaging members and that sort of thing. Just so, you know, basically, I work with people who might already have a community, but it doesn't have an online component yet, or it's just a brand new idea. We need a space. You know, we have an idea for a community of practice. There's a need, and I just try to fill that gap any way I can.
Wow. So with the development of a community such as the international community, how long did it take to grow the membership? I mean, what were some of the strategies that were used?
Yeah, that's a good question. It actually, you know, goes back even further in time. I said 2004, but actually it has a bit more of a history than that. was it? I'm trying to think of the year now. No, I guess it was 1999. It was even, yeah. So that's a long time ago. I'm old all of a sudden. Yeah, 1999, we started an online community called the Global Educators Network that was part of the Telelearning Network of Centers of Excellence. And that was a national research project looking at e-learning. And what we, as part of that project, we had researchers across the country, Canada, and we wanted to find a way to bring those researchers together so they could share their work in progress and get feedback on their research and just sort of, you know, have a way to communicate about what was happening across the whole network. So we started this community with it was actually Linda Harrison was the leader of the Telelearning Network of Centers of Excellence, and so she started the Global Educators Network, and I was hired as a graduate student at the time, and I was hired to just get things going. And we didn't even call it a community at that point. You know, we just knew we needed to connect people. And of course, because of the nature of the research topics, we had access to the technologies to support this kind of thing. So we used a platform called Virtual U, which was developed at Simon Fraser University. Linda Harrison led that project. So we used that platform just to the forum tool. We called it a conferencing tool at that point, just to you know, get some conversations going. So we thought, well, the best way to approach this is rather than just open up the door and say, come and talk, we better really be organized about it and how we approach it. So we decided to schedule monthly topics and have moderators or facilitators, rather, who are part of the research project, facilitate these online discussions, asynchronous only at that point. And then my role was to sort of be the moderator and you know, introduce the person. And so we sort of, you know, got a technique going. I'm sort of going off the tangent of your question, but it's all related. We'll come back. So what we did was we started this schedule. You know, had two or three people lined up as monthly facilitators, and we had intended to invite only the researchers in this, who were part of this research project, but the software itself didn't allow us to easily control the enrollment without a lot of administrative overhead, you know, unless we manually wanted to enter accounts and all the rest of it. So we thought, let's just flip the switch so that anybody can self-register. And so we did. We just flipped the switch just to see what would happen, and people started rolling in. They caught wind of it through who knows how, really, you know, at that point. Because when you think back then, not a lot of people were blogging, and, you know, Twitter didn't exist. But word spread very quickly, and there's just like a real need for this kind of dialogue that just didn't exist at that point. There were listservs, but this was a bit different. You know, there was a format, and a, you know, people with expertise were coming forward to facilitate. So anyway, we ended up with, you know, quite lively discussions that kept getting livelier and better, and, you know, we learned a lot as we went along, and word continued to spread. More people created accounts on the site, and you know, thinking back now, we didn't have a lot of the neat features like any kind of push technology. It couldn't subscribe by email. There's no RSS, that sort of thing. So you had to actually physically go to the site to keep track, and that's the part that astounds me, is that we could carry on with that level of participation with people having to remember to go to the site to check what had happened since last time they were there. But so that's how we grew initially, was like just because the technology wouldn't allow us to self-register any other way. So that project, though, when the funding ended for that research project, there was interest in keeping the discussion going. And so it sort of evolved into the Scope community project. And a lot of the same members just moved to the new platform and carried on. So it's been going on a long time.
Do you think that the kind of discussions, you mentioned that they got quite lively at times. Do you think that the conversations, the discussions in some ways have changed? I mean, not just topic, but I mean in depth, or have there been some changes?
That's a good question. Sometimes I think they have, you know, in certain seminars that we have running, I notice there's not quite the depth, and it feels like people are busier. It feels like they're sort of spread thin across different networks, different communities, different modes of communication. So it's spread out more, and I think it's unusual now for people to really focus in and just zone on one conversation that's happening on one platform. You know, it's feeling a little different, you know, for people. But some of them are still quite well attended, and, you know, excellent discussions, and I still get feedback that people really want that format. So it's a good thing.
And I guess the other thing too is that I guess people have been going back and reviewing what's been, or they've been tapping into or mining the discussions. Has that been happening more often?
It has. You know, one thing that I've always found amazing in all the years I've been involved in this is that I'll run into people at conferences, people I don't know, who say, oh, I love that discussion on, you know, so-and-so. And when so-and-so said that thing about, you know, I couldn't believe blah, blah, and off they go. And I'm just thinking, wow, who are you?
Yes.
And not only, you know, just because I don't expect to know everybody, but it's a matter of people who haven't even created accounts on the site knowing the details. And so there's a whole level of participation on the periphery that we don't know about. So people are really using that. The archives are all available. Often you'll find in a seminar discussion, people will refer back to earlier seminars and say, oh yeah, well, remember back in, you know, when we talked about multi-membership and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, so there's lots of evidence of that.
Have you noticed a trend in the long-term users? Have you noticed how they have perhaps developed their technique of forum discussion? Have they changed somewhat in how they converse with others?
As in, you know, so long-time members who are, you know, come back seminar after seminar noticing trends. I think that some people are, I mean, I sort of noticed that there are certain people who model really good strategies in communicating online, you know, linking back specifically to previous posts and citation, you know, quoting the actual, you know, so-and-so said, not always being speaking in third person, like Derek, you know, Derek contributed this great blah blah, rather than say, you know, hi Derek, mm-hmm. likewise, mm-hmm. you know, and so it's opening up and maybe being more inclusive in the conversation. And so I've noticed that there are people who model that really well, and other people who start to adopt that style, which is great, you know, because that's what you want to see. It makes a big difference on the flow of the conversation. Because you don't end up with one-on-one so much. And I think, I don't know, I was about to say that, you know, I've noticed more care in, you know, just the composing part of it and the linking back and, like, really hyperlinking back and, you know, making it easier for other people to follow the flow. But I started to notice that, and then it feels like it went away again. And it sort of feels like it's the, one, it's maybe the tool itself is not as easy to do as we would like. But also it sort of feels like people can be quite rushed. And there's evidence that, you know, and they haven't read everything, you know, and so they're maybe repeating what has been said before and not you know, engaging in the full seminar from beginning to end. But on the other hand, that's one thing we want to encourage. We want people to know that they can pop in at any time and there's no obligations. And we want to leave it really, you know, beneficial for busy professionals to be able to just participate according to their own time and interests and not worry about that, you know, come late, you know.
They're talking about open educational resources, and they referred to a presentation about sustaining them, and Stephen Downs and Dave Cormier and George Siemens and other educators or very interested in OERs. But I'm thinking from the perspective of, you know, online communities, how to sustain this kind of voluntary, loose organization. Is there a challenge, an ongoing challenge? And do you see that the challenge may, you know, like there are main, I would consider perhaps more obstacles in the future to maintain it? What are your thoughts?
So you mean in terms of maintaining, just keeping the momentum of having volunteers come forward to facilitate and that sort of thing? Well, and I guess one thing is you never run out of topics. And I think that's one thing that people really appreciate in the seminar discussions and scope is that they can see how the interest in topics sort of emerge through participation. So it's not like somebody, some, you know, steering committee body of people deciding that this person's worthy or not. And I think that makes a huge difference, and people find that a lot more appealing. And so I think with that element, people will be more inclined to volunteer, you know, and to step forward and contribute back to the community. So I think that's one thing in our, you know, favor for sure. In terms of, you know, I wondered about the form. I think now there are so many professional development opportunities online, you know, that like never before. I mean, every day you get invitations for free and really excellent, you know, webinars and whatever else. And so I was starting to think that, you know, now we're going to be, you know, just sort of swimming, and, you know, people won't find scope in what we're doing in the sea of everything else that's happening out there. But so far, that hasn't happened. And I think one reason is we're still offering something quite unique, which surprises me, like asynchronous discussions that are scheduled in a forum. You know, sometimes it happens in listservs and what have you, but forum-based, led by volunteers, that's still quite unique. You know, there aren't really very many other people doing that. And it's a different type of a different type of discussion. It's not fast. It's you know, really reflective, thoughtful. Not always as in depth as you would like it to be, but it's a whole different kind of commitment, I guess.
Do you find that the online personalities of the contributors have? I would assume that they haven't really changed. Is that a fair assumption?
Like the who they are? Oh yeah, there's some people who have been there from the beginning. You know, I can name quite a few people who were there day one of the Global Educators Network, who are still in scope, maybe not as always active, but, you know, I know they're there and they'll pop in now and again. And in fact, one of the first seminars that we had in the Global Educators Network, there's a woman named Suz Nyroth from Denmark who, you know, I can't remember exactly how she found out about the discussions. I think she actually had a visit to Simon Fraser University as part of her graduate work or something like that. But anyway, she sort of caught wind of it. And so she participated in one of those seminars. And at a later point, we actually met up at a conference in Toronto and we presented about it. And now we've just been in touch through other communities as well. And she's, you know, comes back to Scope, and she wrote a paper that, you know, was about Scope and other communities. And so there's just this, you know, we just keep weaving in and out and finding one another online, and it's quite interesting.
Generally, I'd like to ask if you have any words of advice or comments to potential members of Scope. What would you like to tell them, or what would you like to explain to them about the Scope community?
I guess probably the main thing would be that you know, we're always looking for people who are willing to give back to the community, and you know, I think a lot of people understand it as something quite different in terms of it's not, you know, there's not a lot of money invested in scope. It's not, you know, flashy. There's nothing really, you know, really glossy about it at all. A lot of people understand that, but others maybe are not aware of that and maybe are less tolerant. And when things go wrong or you know, maybe the topic might be a little off, or the person who has volunteered to facilitate finds he or she doesn't have enough time really to do a great job, and you know, and we expect that, and we expect people to learn from their experiences as facilitators. You know, not everybody's gone in there and facilitated a public seminar, you know, and so first time you're bound to, you know, sort of feel your way through a little bit. So we want people to be tolerant, but you know, and be aware that it's a community working together to make this work, and that it's, you know, we're expecting blips and whatever else, but we're also expecting people to give back as much as they can.
Thank you very, very much, Sylvia.
Thank you.